You are listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church, located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to westhill.net/donate.
Well, good morning, and welcome to you all, and of course, welcome to visitors. I see we have a number of visitors here today, and I don't use the word spoiler alert, but just let us say that West Hill does things in a more unusual manner than what you might expect, okay? So you're welcome to join in at your comfort level. I guess we could say that this was the week that was concerning what's been happening to Greta and to West Hill membership. Challenging, I think, would be an understatement. And I came across a very brief aphorism from a very widely quoted source. You probably all recognize the authorship. It goes by the name of Anonymous. But it does not matter where you are going, it's who you have beside you. That seems to sum up what we're doing here at West Hill. It's a journey. We don't know what's coming down the road in the next months, years ahead, but we're taking the journey together. We wish to acknowledge that we are on the traditional territory of the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nations lands, which were previously occupied by the Seneca and Huron-Wendat First Nations.
I just want to let you know and remind you that our first Sunday in October, which is, of course, the Visitors and Travelers Lunch, is also an opportunity for us to receive new members. And many people had identified that they were wanting to become members of West Hill United Church. That membership includes membership in the United Church of Canada. So we've heard from people that they would prefer, and this was before this week, that they would prefer not to take out membership in the United Church of Canada at this time. And so last week I said that we would also have an opportunity for people who wish to make a commitment, a symbolic commitment to West Hill without the membership in the United Church, that they too, we would also find a way to welcome them, and we're hoping that many people will be part of that and agree to do that. So we're looking forward to that. The board meeting is on Tuesday. I'm not sure Randy mentioned that, and everyone is always welcome to join us at the board to discuss the issues that are at hand at that particular day. And we know there will be some very significant conversations about a number of issues that need to be looked at. We'll also be wanting to talk about some significant vacancies on the board which need to be filled, and we'll talk about that a little bit after the service in our meet and greet. So those were the things I wanted to bring to your attention. Thank you.
The Truth and Reconciliation Call to Action. Each week, in order to remain aware of our treaty obligations and the relationship we have with our First Nations sisters and brothers, we read one of the 94 recommendations sent to all levels of government by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. We expect to complete these readings in June 2017. This morning, we'll be reflecting upon Recommendation 54. We call upon the Government of Canada to provide multi-year funding for the National Council of Reconciliation to ensure that it has the financial, human, and technical resources required to conduct its work, including the endowment of a National Reconciliation Trust to advance the case of reconciliation.
Grounded, Guided, Growing, A Time for Centering, from Scott Kearns.
When we call this a time for centering, I often struggle with the thought because it almost suggests that until we say these words, we're not centered. You're all sort of off kilter until we, and it's not the case. It's just another opportunity to maybe center your thinking upon deep and fundamental values. And so, Peter, if you could just go to the next slide, I just put these words we use, and again, it's not a formula, it's just some thoughts. We focus here on what is our foundation. What do we rest upon that we count upon as there and as true? And that's an important thing. What do we rest upon? Because there's all sorts of choices we can make with that. And then the next word is, given what we've chosen to say is right and true, then how do we make choices given that? And then how do we get better at it? So in the next slide, Peter, I just put those words in. Again, they're just words, but the foundation we center upon is life, because we know it's there, we know it's interconnected, and if it's not there, neither are we. And that's pretty basic, that it's there. So you rest upon this interconnected foundation of life that you have an impact on and that has an impact on you. Those are just big realities. The choice is, how do I live in it? And we just center and center. I hope we do it during the week on what that choice would be, to center, to choose to live in that interconnection with compassion and with justice for all people. And then the intention then, I want to get better at it, because I flop and I fail and I do well and I'm a mixture. And I hope you see yourself as a lovely mixture as well, and that we share the wisdom for living that interconnected life more lovingly.
I just want to share with people that the readings were chosen early in the week to go with the theme of the service. So, they're just perfect.
There are two readings this morning. Acceptance does not mean that you have to like everything or that you have to take a passive attitude towards everything and then abandon your principles and values. It does not mean that you are satisfied with things as they are, or that you are resigned to tolerating things as they have to be. It does not mean that you should stop trying to break free of your self-destructive habits or to give up on your desire to change and grow, or that you should tolerate injustice, for instance, or avoid getting involved in changing the world around you because it is the way it is and therefore hopeless. It has nothing to do with passive resignation. Acceptance, as we are speaking of it, simply means that sooner or later You have to come around to a willingness to see things as they are. This attitude sets the stage for acting appropriately in your life, no matter what is happening. You are much more likely to know what to do and have the inner conviction to act when you have a clear picture of what is actually happening versus when your vision is clouded by your mind's self-serving judgments and desires or its fears and prejudices. That was penned by Jon Kabat-Zinn on a work entitled Full Catastrophe Living, offered as wisdom for the journey.
May we walk in its light.
The second reading, the boy continued to listen to his heart as they crossed the desert. He came to understand its dodges and tricks and to accept it as it was. He lost his fear and forgot about his need to go back to the oasis, because one afternoon his heart told him that it was happy. Even though I complain sometimes, it said, it's because I'm the heart of a person, and people's hearts are that way. People are afraid to pursue their most important dreams because they feel that they don't deserve them or that they'll be unable to achieve them. We, their hearts, become fearful just thinking of loved ones who go away forever, or moments that could have been good but weren't, or of treasures that might have been found but were forever hidden in the sands. Because when these things happen, we suffer terribly. The author is Paulo Coelho from The Alchemist. Offered as wisdom for the journey,
may we walk in its light. I've interrupted Scott, and because I'd like to do the focus moment before we sing the song, so that there's a little bit between the focus moment and the, are you okay with that? Okay. Oh, sorry. Is there a piece you sing? Oh. Okay. Yeah, I wish we could negotiate stuff at home like that. Yes, we do. That's true. The focus moment each week is written to reflect the theme, and imagine my surprise when I opened my calendar where I had plotted in all these themes about the attitudes of mindlessness and saw that this week's theme was acceptance. So that took some digging to find some things that I could use for acceptance. But a book that I've been reading, more for personal reasons than for anything else, is a book by Carla McLaren called The Language of Emotions. And in it, she speaks about how we have a whole village inside us, that we have our emotions create this village, and that it takes a village to be able to help us make our decisions. And so, or to find a way to a full and meaningful life, that we can't allow one of the elders in the village, the emotion that we normally run to, that it feels the most comfortable because it's the one that we know the best. We can't allow that elder to run the whole village. I made up that last part, but anyway. So the focus moment, which was written after I read the Toronto Conference's decision, is based on a mix of Carla's book and the reality of that situation. It is a time of trouble, a time of pain. It is a time for movement,
and a time for change. But it will take the whole village within me to walk these streets, take inventory, feel out the strong and weak places, pace the boundaries, and find our way. Anger. Check. Surprise? Check. Apathy? Check. Hatred? Check. Sadness? Check. Confusion? Check. Distress? Check. Fear? Check. Guilt? Check. Interest? Check. Joy? Check. So here I am. And here you are. Together, all our villages, present and accounted for. May we go well.
As I mentioned earlier, we're working through a series on mindfulness attitudes. At the beginning of June, I started a mindfulness program, an eight-week program, which actually didn't really get underway until the beginning of July. That was the first time I did one of the mindfulness things without falling asleep. So it took a little while. But we're working through the attitudes, which I have found almost more important and more enriching than the actual mindfulness program that I'm doing, because that program wouldn't be rich without my understanding the attitudes. So the attitudes that we've looked at so far is non-judging. I'm going to miss some of these, of course. Non-judging, patience, beginner's mind, trust, non-striving. Is that it? Okay, pretty good. And today is acceptance. The work of mindfulness is about being able to be present in what it is that is going on in your life, regardless of what that is. And often in our lives, if we aren't mindful, if we haven't, you know, learned how to do that well, or we haven't brought ourselves back to recognizing that that's important in our lives, we just do. We just live. We just act in ways that maybe are not the best ways for us. We spend our days busily following the list and getting through the stuff we need to get done, and at the end of the day, we drop into bed and we get up the next day and we do it all again. And we don't check whether or not the things that we're doing are aligned with the values that we say we believe in, or we don't stop to check and see if the pouring of out of our lives in every second that we are awake and on this earth, if the pouring out of that is actually pouring it out into something that we know will gift those around us or future generations or even ourselves with beauty and with hope. We just do. And we never find ourselves at that place of contentment and satisfaction. And that, of course, is one of the reasons why I picked up the Full Catastrophe Living book. Actually, that's not why I picked it up. The first time I picked it up, I thought it was because it was going to help me to figure out, you know, how to manage and make lists a little better so that, you know, I could manage the full catastrophe of my life. It didn't give me any time management techniques whatsoever, and has actually forced me to take an extra 45 minutes or more out of my life every day as often as I can in order to be about that work. So that's why when I saw that the email had come in, you know, I did it just as I was running to the computer to turn it on to play the recording that would take me through the yoga practice, and had to close my email to get to where I was going. And that's why I saw it and I thought, no, not going to do that. So I did the 45 minutes of yoga, and that's what Jon Kabat-Zinn has brought into my life, lo, these many weeks. So today we're talking about acceptance, and it's true that I wrote down in August, I wrote down, just plugged them all into the Sundays, which one was going to be where, according to the way that they were set out in the book, and this is where acceptance landed. And it's true that that's about the last thing I want to do this week, is just accept what's happened. It's true that there's frustration and anger, and there's fear, there's confusion, there's loss, there's despair, there's all kinds of stuff there. But our habits, as McLaren says in her book, our habits tend to run in particular directions, whether they're physical habits we have, or whether eating habits that we have, or whether they're emotional habits that we have. So if my emotional habit in this situation, which is opposite of my emotional habit when in difficult close relationships, which I shared with you last week, the opposite of that non-striving, where I get in those relationships, is the striving to make it better. I am going to make it better. Of course, that means I could write something, I could say something, I could, you know, do something that is going to, like, get right in someone's something and tell them what I think. Generally, that's measured. You know, I don't actually post most of the things I write first hand. I post the second or third version, often I run them through Scott, whose eyes go like this, and I back off a little bit. We have these ways that we respond in different situations. We respond at work in certain ways. We respond in the world in certain ways. We respond in our close relationships in certain ways. And McLaren argues that as young children, very young children, we learn quickly that you're not supposed to say, "Why are you giving that person a hug when yesterday you said blah, 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 blah?" Right? We learn that we're not supposed to share our emotions, right? Or if we do share them, we share them only with people that are very close to us, who are not going to betray us by saying what it was that we said, or how we felt, or who we shared our time with. You know, we learn to capture our emotions and control them, because of that list of emotions that we are comfortable with in the world, that if someone in this space started exhibiting those emotions, the one that we're most comfortable with is joy. Like, we're all supposed to be happy. We're all supposed to be lovely. I know a lot of you are not. Right? Right? I'm guessing, of course, because I see all these lovely people here. What we learn when we are very young, that we are to be lovely to everyone and anyone. And sometimes in our closest relationships, we find space to let the rest of it out, which can wreak havoc with those relationships. But we have to find some place to deal with them. So McLaren teaches us what our emotions are and how to process them, because emotions need to flow through our bodies instead of getting stuck in them. And she teaches you little actions that you can do. The first one she tells you about is to just move your hand like that. Come on, don't be shy. You're not going to hit anybody. If you do, it'll be gentle. Just move your hand a little bit, and maybe the other one, add the other one. And if you're able to take a foot off the ground, shake that too. I can't do it with both feet off the ground. I've tried. So you do that. And she says, because anger is something that is supposed to go from you out into the world, by doing this, you're releasing some anger. And she says, after you do that a few times, you'll often experience a sense of calm. And she tells you to go outside or try to listen to the quietest noise in a room that you're in. What's the quietest thing? Listen carefully. Strain to hear that quiet thing. And once you hear what it is, to get up and move toward it, to get closer, to see if you can actually see it. I did this in the backyard. There was a train going through. I couldn't hear a thing. But When we pay attention, that's what fear calls us to do. It calls us to focus, to get all our senses on high alert, to pay attention. She uses the example of being on the road driving. When I'm talking to Scott on the phone and I'm in the car, I'm always telling him about these crazy people who are driving around me. He can't believe the number of people that drive so crazily around me. But I'm hypersensitive to what's going on, because as soon as you see someone who's doing something you didn't expect, you aren't paying attention. So you have to focus, you have to pay attention, be aware. Your fear challenges you to do that. So she goes through and she teaches us how to process some of those emotions. And although she doesn't actually talk about acceptance, believe me, I looked in the index to see if something was there, I came to the conclusion that in order to get to acceptance, we have to go through all of those emotions. We have to feel what our native elder tells us to feel, what the village elder, who has control of all of our other emotions, says to us, this is the way you're going to deal with this. And we have to filter that by going through the rest of our emotions too, because they're there. 9 times out of 10, they're there. And you know that I'm using the lectionary passages to write a resource that other clergy can use. I have no idea whether they'll find it of any interest after this week, but so that they can create non-theistic services. And so I pull together, I write my focus moments, and I often write hymn lyrics, and I get alternate readings that match the lectionary readings, and I write out sermon notes. And in the sermon notes, I suggest that the person who's putting the service together think of an issue that happens to be before the community or the neighborhood at that time, an issue that's challenging everyone. And to then introduce those different emotions and to invite the community to actually share only on those emotions. It's not unlike Eduard de Bono's Six Thinking Hats, where you take yourself through a lateral thinking process so that you get your experience of the issue at hand out in every possible way. If you're the person, if you've ever been in a board or on a neighborhood committee or a student committee or a teacher's committee, if you've ever been on a committee, there's always someone who conveniently says all of the bad stuff. So you're sitting there going, whew, I don't have to do that. Because this person is going to say all this terrible stuff that's, you know, why we shouldn't do this or why it's horrible for the community. And then someone else is the one who's going to be saying, no, this is great. Look, we can do blah, blah, blah. They've got this blue sky idea about everything's going to be perfect if we undertake this. And you think, oh, thank goodness, I didn't want to have to be the person who, you know, named everything. And that person's so smart, I can just be quiet and they'll go say what they're going to do. Or the person who says, look, wait a minute. We have to look at the details here. Like, what are the details? What are the facts that we actually know? Do you really know if that bylaw is in effect anymore? Or maybe they've taken, you know, the fact that I could get a speeding ticket on the way to church, that was against the criminal code a little while ago. But do I want to test and find out whether it still is? Probably not. So there's always somebody who's got those details that they're bringing to this. Well, I'm saying that these village elders, these emotions in your body, in your psyche, in your heart, these emotions can't be ruled by just one of those people. We've got to bring all of them. What does this issue experience from you in relation to your emotions? What is it that you're angry about? And I know a lot of you, when it comes to the situation that's in front of us right now, anger has been pretty high on the list. But what? What's made you angry? What are the things that have really frustrated you about this that make that elder come out and say, angry, we're angry about this? I think there's a lot of things that we could talk about that we're angry about. Maybe in our time after the service, we can talk about some of those things. And what about it was surprising? I mean, what was surprising about it? I mean, we've been going down this path for 15 years. No big surprise there. Published books, on the radio. You know, people know what we think and what I think. It's not, like, what's surprising? There is surprise in this, still and yet. Even though we might have known what the terrain was going to look like, we're still surprised. Indeed, I was shocked about some of that. Apathy. Have we got some apathy here? Is there apathy around this? Can we find something to be apathetic about? Probably. Is it in the back of our mind somewhere? Is there a village elder there with the big A going, apathy, apathy? Or maybe probably just sitting down with an A on this apathy. Hatred. Is there hatred within us? Do we have the courage to even say that word in a gathering like this, where we talk about love being the most important thing, love and compassion and justice? Are we even allowed to talk about what we hate in this situation? Can we be confident enough in our relationships with one another that we could be honest about that? Could we? Should we? I think we should. I think we need to. I think we can talk about that. When we talk about what it is that we hate, it's those things that we hate that crack our hearts open because they continue to exist. And because we can't bear that they continue to exist. So if we speak to one another about what it is that we hate, if we have the courage to do that,
We break all of our hearts open, and then change can happen. Then we can maybe get beyond just our own guilt or shame at feeling that feeling and find a way to allow it to live in our midst and nurture what it is our response might be to whatever it is that's happening in our lives. Sadness. A lot of us spoke of sadness this week. There are many things that we're sad about, and sharing those with one another, we do that on a regular basis. We have that circuitry in place. We talk about our sadness. And we need to do that here as well. Confusion. You know, that what? That feeling is true and real. And when we get together at our board meeting and the congregational meeting next week, we're going to have to untangle so many threads of possibilities in order to find the one that we want to follow. Confusion reigns in this kind of a situation. But are we just going to sit down and let it, you know, I can't figure this out, like, I can't, then A, you know, like, so confusion is something that we all feel at this point in time. But like hatred, no one really wants to admit it. No, we don't want to say that we're, wait, okay, what? No one wants to really be there. But when we can find our own confusion in ourselves and articulate it, we've moved that emotion through us and into the community where it can be heard and helped, and we can find healing. Distress. Lots of distress. I'm going to run through these a little more clearly, more quickly. Fear, the fear that's invoked here, and how each of us will feel that fear differently. A fear of loss, a fear that, I got an email from someone who's been coming here for a very short time, and he said, I hope you're going to keep West Hill going, because I've just found this place, and it's given a meaning to my life. Like, fear, what is the fear that is yours in the middle of this? Guilt. My guilt is around the things I could have done, the things I should have done, the stuff that might have happened. One of the quotes said that we often crucify ourselves between two thieves, regret for the past and fear of the future. So what are my regrets? What do I feel guilty for not having done? What could I have done to get this information out there more clearly? My colleagues are going crazy this week. They can't believe this has happened, and they don't know what to do. Well, if I'd been better in sharing that story, If I had been clear about, well, I thought I was, but if I had been as clearer, maybe we wouldn't be here. So that guilt is there. And then interest into, okay, what can we do? And joy. Do we have the courage to feel joy here? I have a quote from Sue Monk Kidd from her book. Just a second, I need to find it. From her book, The Mermaid Chair. There's release in knowing the truth. No matter how anguishing it is, you come finally to the irreducible thing, and there's nothing left to do but pick it up and hold it. Then, at last, you can enter the severe mercy of acceptance. The severe mercy of acceptance. The severe. When we go through all our emotions and own them and name them and address the reality with those and through those emotions, it's a severe reality that we face and that we bring to bear. Mercy is when we can acknowledge and own that we are who we are, and this reality is our reality, and we can find space for ourselves in that. And acceptance means this is, and what now? Scott has often spoken of a concern around the Serenity Prayer, which suggests that we accept the things we cannot change. And Scott works in a place where he often journeys with people he counsels whose lives, if one-tenth of what they tell him is true, their lives have been unreal, horribly filled with abuse and loss and fear. And so he doesn't think that we should just accept the things we cannot change. He thinks that we need to acknowledge that there are things that are unacceptable and that we have to find ways to journey with them. So as Sue Monk Kidd has said, when we get to the point where this is our reality and it's unacceptable,
We can rail against that all we want. We can pick it up, hold it, and find our way to live with it, despite the fact we don't feel it is acceptable. May we, in these weeks going forward, may we find a way to get to that place of acceptance in ourselves, not with a decision, or not with a choice, or not with what a committee has said, or not with, you know, what might go down later on, but with the fact that we are here. And we are incredible people. And we touch the world in ways that the world may not have yet been touched. And that is an important thing for us to do. And the reality is not that I have been found unsuitable and that you have been named so as well. The reality is that we are amazing and we have much to do. And we will do that with or without whatever ties we may have to whatever other bodies we have at this point in time or in the future. Because it's too important that we find a way to listen to what we have to say to one another, to find a way to listen to what the world might have to say to us, to find a way to see what's going on out there in the world and to stand in a way that gives us a little bit of a better vision so that we can find a way to react and interact with that that might bring about goodness and dignity and beauty. We are the people who can create change because that's all we can ever do, is step into the future. And as we do so, we create change. So let that change be toward truth and goodness and beauty. And may that change be something that we make together. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Okay. Back at you. Right back at you. Right back at you. You know, one of the important things here, the most important thing here, is that there would be no Greta Vosper if there was not a you. You are the story here. The place that allowed someone to speak as I do. To journey into a statement of belief that is not the norm. You allowed that to happen. So I stand for you. Thank you. That's okay. You can stay up, Pat. Each week we go through this process where I recall you to what lies outside this building, a world filled with all of those things, fear and anxiety and guilt and longing and joy and beauty and hope. And I invite you to go out watching one another go, keeping one another in your hearts, holding one another to the truths of your own beauty as you go out into that world, where you will be challenged and called to live in ways that you may never have imagined, but you have it in you to take that next step and make it a step of change, a step of courage, a step of strength. And if you can't do it alone, you have the courage to reach out and take the hand of someone who can help you do that. So I invite you to go into that strange and confusing world with all that you are, and all that you might yet be. Go from this place in peace.
You have been listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to www.westhill.net/donate.